Hey, Caitlin.
Hey, Rebecca.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. I
That's a long sigh for somebody who's
no,
doing
it's
well.
I feel very good right now. I'm here with my glass of white wine. I have consumed an entire case of seltzer over the past 3 days, so I'm very hydrated. I've had a lot of sort of unexpected free time this weekend. I didn't have any plans, no social distant hangouts, no anything. And I watched all of The Haunting of Bly Manor in a day and a half.
Okay, wait. You were a little freaked out by the first one.
Right. So The Haunting of Hill House scared me to tears at one point. I am a very superstitious person, so watching things that have ghosts or hauntings is really, I think, doubly scary for me because I 100% believe them in them. The beauty of The Haunting of Hill House and why I was so excited for The Haunting of Bly Manor, they're both sort of mini series on Netflix. The Haunting of Hill House dealt with trauma and family, and it used the vehicle of a haunted house as a way to make you think really deeply about how your family and your trauma impact your life and how that shows up in and around you in really beautiful ways. And like the cinematography is beautiful, even though I still have nightmares about The Haunting of Hill House. But The Haunting of Bly Manor, no spoilers, is a little less intense on the scary front. Hella queer.
Oh, intriguing.
Like, I will just say again, no spoilers, but like there were so many bright moments of just queer, like gazing and flirting, and it's always nice to see that in a show and have it not even be a thing. You know, we didn't have a we had a well, let me take that back. We didn't have like a lot of dramatics or sadness associated with the queerness of the story. It just existed and was really beautifully done, and I cried, but I couldn't sleep for a night. But
I love how when you are socially distant and seeing absolutely no one is when you decide to ingest something that
I
might scare
know.
you.
I know, but I knew that I wanted to watch it. I knew that I don't have anyone near me that would watch this with me, so I truly was like, okay, it's just me. But so I'm doing good. I'm happy. That was a good experience for me. I loved it. I might rewatch it. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's leaf peeping season in New England. And
I'm
unlike
sorry.
last year, where there was a lot of wind that knocked everything out of the trees pretty quick, this year I'm just hiking a lot. Anybody who kind of knows me on a personal front knows that I read a bunch and I hike even more. So that's what I do for fun. So yeah, I've just been doing that stereotypical thing of ingesting pumpkin flavored stuff and watching the leaves change. So
You
yeah.
sound like you're right out of some seasonal lesbic that
Oh, I
someone
am definitely, yeah. I'm
is
definitely like the best friend, dorky carpenter, who tells her, just go for it. You only get one chance, but never actually gets anybody herself, which is not reminiscent of my life. I'm very partnered in life, but you know, I know my stereotype is the goofy best friend, and I'm okay with that. So, not all of us can be diligent ice queens, Caitlin.
Well, we all have our roles in life.
I love how you don't disagree with me. So, a few weeks ago, when we were parsing out what we were going to talk about this fall, we had both said we want a little bit of levity, and there's probably going to be a moment that we don't want to be in cold weather or fall weather because the books don't have to completely mirror everything that we're doing in real life. And we were both in a high stress week, and we're like, what's a low angst book? And thank goodness for other people we read books with. And think like I'm indefinitely grateful to the companionships I have with fellow readers. And I completely own recommending this book to you because of Brenna and Brenna's outreach early on with the pod. She introduced me to Duncan. We've talked about her on multiple, like, personal happy hours. And, yeah, I just wanted you to read Veritas because it just felt like a book with your name written all over it.
Mm-hmm. It's always really exciting for me when I get to read a book that mirrors one of my favorite reality TV shows. In this case, Below Deck Med, or the classic Below Deck. And I do think that they have a Below Deck Sailing now. So it was, this was 100% gayer and different than
There's only two people in this book besides the clients.
That's what, we'll talk about that. I loved having that visual in my head of these reality shows that have been around for a long time and getting to read through this story. And I loved just like the brightness of the book, both through the setting and the writing. So I thank you. Thank you, Brenna. You know, we typically announce our book choice about a week in advance. And every time we announce a book, we get some sort of feedback from people being excited or can't, you know, being excited to read it, or it's one of their favorites. And so that's a great way that we love interacting with our listeners and fellow readers. And I will say, when we announced that we were going to be doing this book, we immediately, I got of text messages, we got some comments. Like, it just felt like everywhere we posted that we were doing this, we had positive feedback, which was just exciting. Like, it made me even more excited to talk through the story with you.
Yeah, I love when inboxes are, you know, full of the, I didn't want to post this publicly, but here, this is like why I love this. And in the beginning, it used to like really wig me out. I don't want to say anything about somebody's favorite book, but I think our conversations are based on, you know, our just how incredibly blown away we are by anybody taking the chance to write and share a creative story. And then also just all representation's vital. So we're just here for it. Yeah, I went back and reread it. I talked to a couple people about it, kind of figuring out how I was going to talk to you about it, because this is not a book with much of a driving plot other than time running out. Mm-hmm. Can you introduce us to how this book kicks off?
So when our story opens, we meet Lauren Murphy, who is a chef from New York City. She's a little burnt out. She needs a break, and she's accrued all this time. So she decides to take a temporary posting as a personal chef on a boat, like a sailboat, in the American and British Virgin Islands. And we, our first chapter, our segue into the story, it's not even a meet cute. It's her looking across the restaurant. She's out to eat. She's enjoying a drink. She's, you know, loving the flavors, being close to the water. They're in St. Thomas. And she sees this hot queer woman chatting somebody else up, and she's drawn to her, she's excited, she's feeling good. And then, you know, the next day or so, she goes to meet the captain of the boat. She meets Gray Wells, who just so happens to be that hot queer woman that she saw at the restaurant the night before. And to Lauren's dismay, Gray, she can immediately tell, is so unhappy that she's there.
Yeah. Yes. So she, you know, Lauren's taking her paid vacation and choosing to work because she just functions better when she works. She's a sous chef who wants to keep climbing the ladder. This is another thing on the resume. And the catamaran that she's going to be the chef for hosts not only just this smoking hot woman, but this smoking hot queer young woman who we find out a few more chapters into the book was a coding and computer engineering individual who wrote search engine codes and was able to sell it for a nifty little profit, and now owns the Veritas, the catamaran that we're on for this time. And basically, when you pay to charter the boat, it comes with a chef and with the captain getting you place to place, and it's a private sailing vessel. And I mean, yes, please sign me up. Like, mm-hmm. I would happily make apple nachos and turkey sandwiches for lunches and decadent dinners to sail around the BVIs and the Virgin Islands and do this. Like, talk about, see, wow. Like,
say that because you haven't watched Below Deck. You cannot pay me enough money to do this job. But MJ Duncan does an amazing job of setting the scene, making it sound beautiful. And it, like, I want to return to some of Duncan's choices as far as plotting and character, but it's all over, like, the experience of working on this boat and as far as interfacing with the people who are renting it and spending their vacations on it and the weather that they seem to have, and everything is like pretty smooth and like they have some ups and downs as far as like the job aspect of it, but there's certainly not anywhere like a Bravo mid-season, like, can you believe this is going to happen trailer, which I was expecting. So I spent the whole book being like, oh my God, like they're going to crash. They're going to sink. What's going to happen?
So when I recommended this to you, I was really intrigued because I would argue it is the least angst-driven book the two of us are going to talk about. The plot in this is very simple. Spoilers abound, as always. Mm-hmm. Gray is unhappy to see Lauren board the vessel because Lauren physically embodies Gray's ex-fiance's aesthetic, who she lost to cancer. So that is Gray's drama. And then Lauren's drama doesn't really exist, except the captain doesn't look happy to see her. And then the thing working against these two is not elements, is not horrible things going awry all the time. It's the fact that in the course of the two of them getting to know each other, they have a very limited window before Gray will return to New York. And that window is 2 weeks.
Before Lauren will return to New York.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. So yeah, before Lauren returns to New York, the only drama outside of that, and the drama, you know, besides their interaction initially, is that Lauren has 2 weeks of taking this temporary gig before she returns to New York and hopefully continues to climb up the ladder of working in fine dining establishments and going from sous chef to lead chef. So that's it. That's really the only drama. A little bit with the cat. We'll get into that. But that's it. That's all we get. Mm-hmm. And somehow, I was never bored.
Oh,
like,
no.
I just... it speaks to the writing, which we're going to dive into, no pun intended, more, but to have so little that you know was going to fall apart other than time eclipsing speaks so much to how these characters are written and how badly I just wanted to keep like chasing them page to page and see what happened next. Mm-hmm. Caitlin, what did you think?
I was really struck by the sparseness of this book. And I don't mean that in any kind of, I mean that in a really positive way. Like, oftentimes we are introduced to worlds through lesfic that are like chock full of drama and issues and secrets and characters and family relationships and like tiny towns with like a million punny shops. And this, in contrast, is so spare. We have our two main characters, as I've said before. We have the people who are renting their boats. Both of them have a friend that they are sort of reach out to at various points. And we do get the backstory of their lives, what their lives were before they met each other, but it's not, we're not bogged down too much by that. We really get to sit and revel in this relationship And because we're so focused just on these 2 weeks that they're together on this boat, getting to know each other, falling for each other, spoiler alert, we really get to witness every aspect of their relationship. You know, there's no skip ahead. There's no like, well, it's been a great month and a half, like, and it's been sunny and all the sex has been good. Instead, we are forced to focus on every little moment that builds into a real relationship. And so it was a really intriguing way to think about connection and think about what it means to be falling into a person for, you know, the first time, or getting to know someone for the first time.
As mentioned previously, we learned very quickly that Gray is unhappy to see Lauren strictly because of how Lauren looks. So we have this dialogue of, okay, so I want to take a moment and tangent off and come back to the book. Mm-hmm. This is something I think I notice in Lesfic, but I think it's unfair that I notice it in Lesfic. We have characters and women loving women in other women's books. I'm not trying to erase any gender identity or sexual orientation. We have moments where other side characters or our main characters will talk about how the person they're with reminds them of an ex aesthetically. Mm-hmm. And it's like almost like a thing within the genre, like a trope within the genre. And I've been sitting on this a lot lately because I've been kind of unpacking, like, well, do I have a type? Which is, of course, yes. If you line up my exes, they're all mostly brunettes of a certain height presenting a certain way. Like, I apparently have a type. But I'm also dating people who are the same identifying gender as myself, and the pool is smaller. I don't read enough straight fiction to know how often, like, it's mentioned, like, well, he looks like my ex-boyfriend, he looks like my ex-husband. So one of the main plot points within this is how much Gray believes Lauren mimics and looks like her dead fiancé. Lauren is a redhead, fiery spirit, some of the tropes that often go with redheads. And I can't help but wonder if it feels so on the nose because she is a redhead and she is a little bit taller, if it would also be a thing if she was blonde or brunette or anything else. Mm-hmm. So the first time I've read this book multiple times, there was some apprehension on my part because I really want to root for these two from page one. But if somebody's dealing with trauma at that level, it's like, but is that fair to the other MC? In this case, Lauren, like, is Lauren ever a real person to Gray? Mm-hmm. If Gray sees her ex-wife in her? But I think Duncan is majestic, and I stand by that word. And even Lauren calling her out and going, hey, I want these moments. But if you're thinking of Emily, her former fiance, I don't want to be a replacement for Emily. I am Lauren in front of you, and there may be things that remind you about her, but I am not her. Mm-hmm. And I'll get into more of where I think Duncan masterfully does this. But what's your feeling about entering a book where one character says another character reminds them of somebody else, and that pressure already put on that person to disprove they're not that person?
Hmm. I haven't thought too deeply about that, which is interesting. And I think you're right that this is something that is pointed out a lot more in these books. I'm certainly not reading a lot of straight romance where these similar kinds of conversations would be happening. And I generally don't read books written by men. So I don't know what they're doing. I bought it reading this book. And I tend to buy it because, like yourself, I have a type. Like, I deny it, but if you point out who I've dated in the past, I have a physical type. But I do think you're right. Like, I think the tension of this novel of, like, I dislike you so strongly because you are so similar to this other person. And it continues for a little bit. Like, it Gray's actions from that towards Lauren do go on a bit longer than I had anticipated with that in mind. And I agree that Duncan really carefully gives Lauren as much agency within the relationship, especially when they're just figuring each other out, as possible, in a way that feels really good. And I think anytime you get into a relationship with someone who had such a strong previous entanglement, and especially if you're dealing with someone who their relationship was tainted or ended by forces outside of their control, like sickness or death, I think that's, you're always going to be wondering, like, am I getting compared to the ex? Am I getting compared to the previous person? You know, there's always the ghost of previous relationships. So I agree with you. I think it could have, there could have been some pitfalls, but Duncan quick, like, jumps over them and leaps over them to get us to some really exciting points beyond that.
There's a scene within the novel where, okay, first and foremost, I love when you can tell an author mostly publishes or self-publishes or does whatever that their work through e-readers, because mm-hmm. their characters are usually reading books on e-readers within their novels versus, like, just reading a book. You'll notice more now, I'm sure, going forward. But, like, self-published authors almost always talk about, like, a Kindle or an e-reader. I kind of like the nod. But there is a scene where Lauren is reading and Gray comments on it. And they start comparing things they've read before. And we learn through the process that Gray and Lauren both read fan fiction and both have what they ship, no pun intended. And Gray talks about reading a certain series but stopping because she felt that she was kind of being queer baited and led by the author and she wasn't going to get what she wanted. And she mentions that her former fiance was, like, a huge fan, but she couldn't bring herself to do it. And we hear Lauren side with Gray and have similar feelings about the books as Gray does. And Gray and Lauren even relate over a shared name of Lauren's cat and where the name came from. And I think there's this very intricate dance that's being done that I didn't catch on my first reading, where Gray is physically in a position with learning about Lauren, where Lauren may have similarities, but the similarities are only the greater broad context. Like, they both read fan fiction, but Lauren's fan fiction focuses here. Mm-hmm. Gray's former fiance really liked this, but Lauren feels very differently about it. So there are little things that shift more and more things away to make Lauren her own unique person, instead of having so much in common with with Emily, the past fiance. Mm-hmm. And I think that, because we see everything they do, we're with them every single day. I think that slow unfolding and reassembling the woman in front of her is, it lit me cheer for these two. I never felt like it was mourning remanifested in a mirror image. It was a very unique relationship, and I thought it was really, really well done.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So as we've said before, they're working on this boat that different groups of people rent and spend their vacations on. And the first group is a family that has little kids, mom and a dad, and then, like, three little kids.
Yeah, it's Kim and Will and their three boys.
I loved how they're building this relationship. They are getting to, Lauren and Gray are getting to know each other and are starting to have these romantic moments and, like, these sexual tension filled moments. And not only are their duties, like, their jobs are sort of keeping them from fulfilling any of that, because they're both busy, they both have different roles, they have a lot of work to do because they are the only two people working on this boat. But then the moments where they think that they can accomplish something, like,
they're getting beaver dammed by, like, four upset stomachs of, like, children.
Oh, like, but it's so good. It reminded me of being, like, a camp counselor. Not that I was, like, trying to have sex while I was a camp counselor, but I just remember, like, you never had moments that were yourself, even if it was your day off, even if you didn't have to work that session or that you had an hour, but just, like, the different level that you have to hold yourself to, because you're like, oh, I want to do X, Y, and Z. I want to be with this person. I want to explore these things with this person, and I can't because these little kids, like, they're back an hour early. They're throwing up. Like, what? happening.
So I think Will and Kim, the parents on this with their three young boys, one are just like, talk about the best freaking people renting your opportunity, like, ever. Like, Kim is one superwoman, because anytime they're talking about anything happening with the kids, Kim is always doing it. Not to say Will is useless, but Duncan has Kim do most of it. Kim's even up early to just get, like, a private shower and have 5 minutes to herself. Mm-hmm. Will kind of comes across as, like, you know, a doteful husband, but definitely not the one who's hands-on all the time. Mm-hmm. And we do get these two flirting, and we get this great first kiss scene after a dinner where not Lauren, who's so food, like, forward with her entire life and goals, but where Gray takes Lauren to one of her favorite places and was like, I get the same thing every time. We're here by the water. This is what I want. And that introduction, I think there's this really, we both love books about food and about chefs. I mm-hmm. love when a character introduces a chef or another person who eats to food, because I think for a lot of people in the food industry, there's a lot of pressure. They always get, like, the top meal or whatever, this or that. And I thoroughly believe, like, when I worked in food service, which was for a very long time, my favorite meals were the ones where people, like, I love this food, let me show you what I really enjoy eating, no pun intended, with these two. So we get that great first kiss, and then they're trying to, like, find private moments, but again, they're working, there is somebody who paid a lot of money for the services that they're providing, and we eventually stop getting the beaver damming, and these two get to it. Mm-hmm. Multiple, I mean, there's a lot of sex in this book. There's a lot of good sex in this book.
Yeah, it is a lot.
It's a lot? That's it?
No, I know. I mean, it was a lot. This is, like, almost as much sex as, like, the Honor series, which is really up there as far as, like, sheer number of sex scenes in a book that's not erotica, for me, at least.
So, I do have... Is this where we want to jump into the sex scenes?
Well, might as well.
A lot of times when we talk about sex scenes, it's like the initial sex scene, of course, everybody, uh-huh. as you would say, comes together. And then it's like some elevation of, like, some really, like, let's try something new. Let's figure out power play. Let's try, like, there's something there. Duncan doesn't do this as much, as these two just really enjoy each other's bodies. And the backdrop is the trampoline on the front of the boat, the water that they're near, below deck, whatever. But it's not erotic or intimate. It's just real. I don't want to undermine anything else. I think a lot of times, a lot of people give, a lot of authors we've shared on this podcast give, like, a couple moments of touch, a feel, moving towards climax, the end of the scene. And with this Duncan novel, we get exploration, teasing. There's so much teasing, like verbal teasing. There's like touch up in it. We get so many this is very much a see book, not a tell book. Mm-hmm. Like, we are brought in as voyeurs to watch these two be intimate with each other. Mm-hmm. And it's different than what we've kind of talked about publicly before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, you're definitely right. And something that I've been thinking a lot about, and I don't know that I have any coherence about this, is we really do oftentimes get books where they have, like, the initial setup or the initial sex scene, and then no two sex scenes feature the same physical act. Like, that's very common in these books, because you're trying to, I think, excite the readers and, like, you know, write different stuff. And Duncan, the buildups are different, and they are really exploring each other, as you say, but, like, the mechanics are pretty similar each time. But, and normally that would really bother me. Like, that is something that, like,
I can't wait until this After Dark episode. I just really can't.
Yeah, I don't always enjoy that, but I think you're right where Duncan, each sex scene has a purpose. Like, each sexual moment is a vehicle through which they are exploring or working through different aspects of their relationship, even if that if that moment is just like them celebrating in each other. And it feels very real for a relationship that takes place over the course of 2 weeks. Like once you start boning, you're just going like rabbits. And especially when you figure out like what feels really good and you just want to keep doing that over and over again. So
yeah, it's not repetitive in the beginning because every time is a little bit more exploration than the time before. And depending on like how much light you have, what time of day it is, it's all brand new. Yeah. And they even, Kim and Will, the parents kind of have like an ongoing bet of something's going on with these two and basically tell them, hey, we've got the boys. You don't even have to bring us sandwiches for lunch. We don't need anything fancy. And then we'll see you guys tonight. Bye. Basically like they basically become the friend who knows that you two are shagging or trying to give you space. I don't, mm-hmm. You just couldn't ask for better clients. They were supportive and they're supportive of like you two being together and then paying for a service where like the two people are dating to begin with, let alone a same gender identity, sexual orientation couple. But then they also carve out space for these two they know what they're going to do. They're like, yeah, we'll just make sure we stay off the boat for the next few hours. Have fun. Mm-hmm. They do exchange eventually. They're like, hey, go have a date night. We've got the boys. We'll watch them for you. And, you know, they let the boys man the sails and they make a thing called apple nachos, which I think is delightful. And I will definitely, definitely use. Yeah. It worked for me. All of it worked for me. Like, mm-hmm. And the angst was, it shouldn't be heightened the first 2 weeks. We're not jumping, you know, one chapter leads to 3 days later or anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think Gray is coming into herself and able to show off these new things to fresh eyes. But I really believe that Lauren has a good sense of who she is. Mm-hmm. The one of the only moments, and I'll bring this up to you, I've talked to somebody else about this. We learn Lauren has a cat. The cat got into an altercation with the dog. Her friend is cat sitting. This is also how we get Lauren to tell somebody she's hooking up with Gray. So it's a character to kind of move Lauren's story a little bit more. Show Lauren's not, you know, crazy and never going to go back to New York. And then fast forward to the end of the book, we find out the cat isn't coming with with her back. So were you okay with this scene?
I mean, no, no, but I mean, I was so with it. MJ Duncan, I was so with it because just to give some context, you know, the 2 weeks are up, Lauren goes back to New York, she gets a great job opportunity. You know, things are falling into place and she just can't. She and Gray are trying to do long distance and it's just
they have that heartbreaking. I'm so careful to you about this because like this is a life experience that I don't think anybody likes to talk about, but I think there is a very unique thing about physical and intimate touch with somebody when you guys are going to be pulled apart, and it's not because you're breaking up, it's just because the world is not letting you be together right now. And that type of emotional put everything into that, like that scene is just, I didn't need angst. That scene broke me into like 1,000 little tiny pieces because like Gray's just trying not to cry, but also climax. And it's just, it's such a, if you've never experienced it, I don't wish it on you. And if you have, like, I hope you're taking care of yourself now and that pain is unique. And I'm so sorry you went through that. Anyway, so yeah, like Lauren's back in New York interviewing for gigs and Gray's back on her boat doing what Gray does. So,
yeah. And Lauren has the realization, you know, like I'm not happy and the person that I thought I was has radically changed through this relationship and through this experience. And I want to go be with Gray. And it's like a one throwaway line. It's like, she says this all to her friend, the friend who was pet sitting originally. She's like, will you take my cat? Or like, I can't take him. And at that moment, I was like, you will put a life vest on that cat and you will take it. But I get it. I get it.
I don't know what it says that in the first reading I didn't remember this as well. I think I blocked it because you've seen me. I'm ride or die for Parker and Julius. Mm-hmm. But
I mean, I've my cat is a deal breaker for relationships. If you don't like my cat, I don't like you. And I learned that the hard way. But again, I suppose it is impractical to have a cat on a boat in the middle of the ocean. I get it. She could have had a dog, and she could have brought the dog. I'm just saying. That was a choice. Well, because, so...
But she lives in New York. You know how hard it is to find a dog-friendly apartment in New York?
Everybody in New York has tiny little puppies. Tiny little dogs.
This was written in 2014. And, tiny little dog. I guess. But,
when you go to New York, everyone's walking their little dogs. And I will also say, I'm coming off... I think we're both coming off of a lot of recent releases. Few of which are set near water, like coastal, and they all feature dogs.
All of them.
So, and now I see why. the dog can go on the boat with you.
I think also dogs are just easier in creative storytelling for moving a story forward because the dog can intervene or do things. Cats are cats,
Yeah, I mean, I just read a different work by a different author, and the cat did a lot of work to propel the story forward in a way that's very dog-like, and it kicked me out so much. It just did not work for me. This was my first time reading this book.
Mm-hmm.
This was not your first time reading
it. No.
What was it like to reread it? Was there anything that really stuck out for you? Was there a single scene or a moment that just still sparked joy that you were excited to see again?
I mean, the book's freaking hot, period. It's weather and temperature alone. These two just have really great chemistry. I was a lot more aware in the reread, getting ready for what we were going to talk about, really looking for those questions to ask you. And did I get kicked out and things like that, where I paid a lot of attention to what made Lauren unique versus who she was being compared to. It's also one of the few books I've read where when somebody describes what the characters are wearing, I'm not okay, I don't care. And this is why. I close date a book very quickly, and they can also, what you find attractive somebody else as a reader may not. Good example, you love a cargo short, Caitlin. You know, you love when people mention cargo shorts. If you haven't listened to a previous episode, Caitlin hates cargo shorts. So there is this thing, this risk you take, right? Everything you do that should be about you as an author, and the things you're writing and the story you're sharing should be about you. But readers are greedy and sometimes rude, and they will make it about only them, and they'll let stuff be a reason that they don't promote it. The reason the clothing worked for me in this is because we go day by day and we have such a limited time that it also lets me know what the greater context of the weather is around them, what kind of port they're coming into, how that port presents itself, and how safe they may be subconsciously because of queer spaces. So it was all just enough for me. And then for being a book that's 6 years old, it didn't do much to kick me out. And I think that speaks really well to finding commonality as an author, something I don't possess. And I went from just enjoying the book to being really kind of impressed with the longevity of its narrative storytelling.
Yeah. Until I looked up reviews, I had no idea that this book was a couple years old. And I'm just, thank you for suggesting it. And thank you for introducing me to Duncan. And I can't wait to read more of her stuff.
There's a treasure trove of it, and I definitely have my own recommendations. The one thing we received from quite a few people as we were, as we kind of posted it and people were mentioning things, quite a few people who reached out to us privately and publicly mentioned how it was one of the first books they really experienced with two female identified female dating people. And I really just kind of sit on when people tell us what their introduction was. We've had one author who came on who shared with us that her first book was not a great experience. And many of us do have this, like, hey, I saw myself. I wanted more. And I can't help but think, if this was your first introduction with this type of getting to know people and this type of, like, really experiencing connecting to somebody, not even sexually, just like that type of work and those type of communication trajectories and things, what that then means for those readers who went on to experience things like an L. Spencer book with a shooting scene at the end of it, you know, the angst is super high, or a Dina Blake book, or a Melissa Braden book, or a Katie Williamson book, because they're all so different from this. Mm-hmm. And I'm just really intrigued. And if you hear this and you're willing to share that with us, what was that? Was it whiplash? Did you go to something with comparable angst? What did that look like? Because I don't know what my reading experience would have been if I started here. Mm-hmm. I think what I would seek out would be very different, because this is just calming in a good way. It's a feel good.
Yeah, I agree. I really agree. Well, Rebecca, if people want to tell you those answers, how do they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Rebecca ATTT Pod, or on Instagram at Rebecca Writes a Romance. You can find us at A Tip of the Tongue on Instagram, or Caitlin on Twitter. You can find us at
ATTT Pod. And you can find me on Instagram at Same Sex in the City, or on Twitter at Same Sex the City. And we love hearing from y'all. Thank you to everyone who's left us a review. And again, like, to everyone who responds to anything we post or reaches out to us to share book suggestions, like, thank you. That interaction is so valuable. And I think both of us are really humbled to get to just sort of be part of this community and get to interact with all of you. So thank you.
Yeah, I get great recommendations from you. I know in my queue for this week, I have a few things lined up. Mm. You know, I'm finally jumping in to Backwards to Oregon by Jay. It's just been on that list for forever, and I'm moving it to the top of the pile. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing a lot of research for our end of the month episode, which ghouls, vamps, and everything in between. That's all the hint you're getting from me today. But good grief, this sapphic history is, yeah. Caitlin, I'm going to just know the next, I'm geeking out. Like, you're getting full nerd. Mm-hmm. But is there anything outside of watching haunted queer spectrums and homes and other places that you're doing as well?
Yeah, so, you know, I've taken the last few weeks to reread basically every lesfic that I've ever read. So I'm working my way again through all of Fiona Riley. I just finished the Perfect Match series, which might be an annual reread for me. And as far as new things that I'm new to me, I'm reading Twice Shy by Aurora Ray. And yeah, like you said, I'm gearing up for our upcoming episode, and I can't wait. Yeah, I can't wait to geek out.
You know, I'm sure everybody can kind of tell in this episode, you and I have put a lot of work in this last week, and a chill book was lovely, but we're also so chill, so there's just not a lot of, like, over-enthusiastic exit here, because it's just nice to talk to you and see you. This is the type of book I want to talk to you about over brunch, not over drinks in a loud bar.
I miss brunch.
I miss you.
I miss you too.
But the brunch in DC is banging. I get it. Like, it's no worries. I hope in this time that you are staying socially distant and doing whatever you need to do. It involves self-care. And as always, I'm so thankful for you. Yeah. Oh, last one. What do you think of the jokes in here? Were they too crude? Like the whale joke, did you think it was funny?
I I don't know if I'm the target audience really for any joke.
I don't know which.
I don't mind them.
Okay. They never finished the dinosaur joke, and there's a lot of gay dinosaur jokes, but I couldn't help but wonder which. Like, you know what a lesbian dinosaur is called, right?
Tell me.
A lick a lot of puss. I'll see you next week. Bye, Caitlin.